content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Anna Kogal from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from 17 Magazine and Glamour Magazine, as well as What Day Is It Tomorrow? Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached by kiwanisfoundation.org. Welcome back, everyone. And it is the tail end of March 22nd, Thursday evening. We're going to start off with a few things that happened a while back, but that are important that I think that you can relate to. And if not, you'll learn something new. Okay, and the first one, seeing that today is March 22nd, well, on March 21st, Nowruz, Iranian New Year, houses are cleaned and redecorated. Wheat and lentil seeds are planted indoors. Small cuttings of shrubbery are set afire in yards for families to jump over. And children go door to door seeking small gifts. The vernal equinox occurs on March 21st. And in Iran, spring and the new year are ushered in together. It is a festive time that lasts for 12 days. During this period, people eat special foods such as apples, vinegar, olives, fish, and sweet and sour dishes from a ritual table, the haftzin, to ensure another year of fertility and well-being for their nation. All right. And I'll bet some of you know this name. On March 22nd, today, 1846, the birth date of Randolph Caldecott. Randolph Caldecott was born in Chester, England, and began drawing when he was a young boy. In 1871, several of his drawings appeared in the magazine London Society. The following year, he settled in London to work as an artist. When Washington Irving's Old Christmas appeared with his illustrations in 1876, Caldecott's reputation was firmly established. 2 years later, he began working on nursery toy books. His most famous illustrations, however, were those for William Cowper's poem, The Diverting History of John Gilpin. In 1886, Caldecott made a trip to the United States, during which he died in Florida on February 12. The Caldecott Medal is named for this artist. This award, begun in 1938, is given annually by the American Library Association to the artist of the most distinguished picture book for children. Can you think of one that you particularly liked? I think Make Way for Ducklings was my favorite one. All right, and just one more. March 25th, 1871. Okay, this is going to be your trivia question. Do you know who made, who was the artist, the sculptor who made the Mount Rushmore in South Dakota? Do you know? Well, I'm going to tell you. Because on March 25th, 1871, he was born. Gutzon Borglum, G-U-T-Z-O-N, B-O-R-G-L-U-M, Gutzon Borglum, an American sculptor, is best known for the noted Mount Rushmore Memorial in South Dakota, which features the heads of four United States presidents, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Abraham Lincoln, and Theodore Roosevelt. The busts are the largest in the world. Other works by Borglum include the head of Lincoln in the rotunda of the Capitol building in Washington, D.C., and a statue of Lincoln seated on a bench, which is located in Newark, New Jersey. Borglum was born John Gutzon de la Mothe, M-O-T-H-E, Mothe, Borglum, to Danish parents in Idaho. He died in 1941 before the Mount Rushmore Memorial was completed. His son, who had worked with him, completed the job. All right, that's your trivia for the day. You never know when you might need it. Okay, on to something a little more serious and really quite exciting. This article from the March issue of Glamour magazine is entitled Live from Afghanistan. The first ever all-female TV news station, there runs a lot like any station in the U.S., with one big exception. These journalists are risking their lives. By Sophia Jones. It's 4 a.m., and Kabul is dark and still. Shabana Nouri wills herself out of bed to drink a cup of hot tea. The 22-year-old news anchor and fledgling star of ZAN TV, has to get to work by 6 for her Friday morning shift. ZAN, whose name means woman in Dari, is the first and only TV station in Afghanistan for women, made up of an all-female team of journalists, most of them in their early 20s. Launched in the Afghan capital in May, the station sheds light on everything from cosmetics, once banned under the Taliban, to women in sports, also previously banned, to domestic violence, tragically still commonplace. Until now, there has never been a show, let alone an entire station, focused on women's issues. The fact that the women of ZAN are openly talking about them on national television is revolutionary. Sleepy-eyed, Nouri isn't thinking about how she's a role model. She's focused on her daily morning dilemma, what to wear. Normally, she'd choose a form-fitting outfit in shocking greens, deep reds, intense blues. But today, Nouri is in mourning. Her aunt has recently died. She picks a dark ensemble, a long black skirt, a black headscarf, a black choker necklace, and a navy t-shirt. Still, she shows her rebelliousness. Her tea reads, "What in the funk do you see?" in white block letters, and her nails are painted glittery gold. By 5, she's running late. Grabbing her purse and an apple, Nouri heads outside, shimmies into a pair of black stilettos on the front porch, and proceeds to gracefully navigate the rough road outside, the cracked pavement, the open sewer. Her father, Ghulam Mohammed, waves goodbye, proud of his daughter, the youngest of his 5 children, and the career she's built for herself that helps support her family. "I want her to achieve her goals," he says. "I want her to be a tool for the truth." Ghulam is illiterate, as is his wife, Khanum Gul. But they believe their daughter, their outspoken, fearless, beautiful daughter, is going to be someone, if she's not killed first. A new image of female strength. On most early mornings, Nouri hurtles to work through Kabul traffic in a ZAN TV car. Women were banned from driving during Taliban rule from 1996 to 2001, and even now most women still don't or can't drive. On this late summer morning, a few days before Afghanistan's Independence Day, she and her driver pick up her colleague, who asked not to be named to protect her safety, on the way to the office. It's almost peaceful, and for a moment, it's possible to forget the fear that rules this chaotic, bomb-scarred city, with its weekly suicide attacks and ugly blast walls. The car pulls up near the station. The street has been blocked off by security guards, but sometimes even road closures and armed officers aren't enough to stop violence in Kabul. In 2015, gunmen stormed the hotel across the street from the station in an attack targeting foreigners, killing 14 people. Nouri and her colleague, whose face is shielded by oversized sunglasses, get out of the car and walk the rest of the way, smiling as they dodge puddles of murky water. They go through a secure gate, topped with razor wire, and past an armed guard and quotations Nouri and the team painted on the wall. "Violence against women is an insult to humanity." And, "With women's empowerment, there is a better tomorrow." Some of Afghanistan's legendary roses, in pinks and whites border the balconied green and burnt orange building. Once inside, the two young women are greeted by the friendly, tired faces of the early morning shift. Nori heads upstairs to get her hair and makeup done, then joins her co-host, Shamla Niazi, for their two-hour morning talk show. They sit in front of a blue sky background where they laugh, discuss recent events, and dig deep into potentially life-saving and life-changing issues that matter to Afghan women. It's a vibe similar to The View, with some Afghan flair. On this particular Friday, the host talks about the importance of freedom in the developing world and compare those without freedom to caged birds. Afghans love to be poetic. In the green room, a mother, Marzia, 39, watches the set with her two daughters. They usually tune in to Zan at home, but today they'll be on air themselves, showing their taekwondo moves. In America, it would be a typical feel-good moment. But it's quietly bold in Afghanistan, where women's bodies and their strength are often hidden, not celebrated. As a child, I wanted to be in sports, but I didn't have the chance, Marzia says. I tried to give that opportunity to my children. A song ends just before a commercial break. At the end, there's a dedication to Nadia Anjuman, a 25-year-old Afghan poet, beaten to death by her husband in 2005. It's one way Zan, regularly and subtly, introduces sensitive issues casually into the conversation. A life full of risks. Born as the Taliban came to power, Nori understands how fragile her freedoms are. Under that hardline Islamic leadership, Afghan women like her mother were forced into billowing head-to-toe burqas and largely barred from studying, from working, or even from venturing outside their home without a male family escort. Women's rights advocates were driven underground, risking their lives simply to teach girls how to read and write. It was difficult to keep you alive, Nori recalls her mother saying when she was younger. It was such a struggle. Now Nori knows she's made her mother proud. My mom loves to watch me on TV, she says. My mom always says, because I'm illiterate, what you do has so much value. The U.S.-led invasion of Afghanistan to take down al-Qaeda was also touted as a way to liberate Afghan women, and it did help bring about some changes. Today, women in the country are slowly but increasingly pursuing higher education, running for office, training for the Olympics, even building robots. But those gains have been limited. Despite three U.S. administrations pouring billions of dollars into the country in what is now America's longest war, the Taliban continues to have a strong influence in large swaths of Afghanistan, and many Afghan girls and women are still kept home by their families, who view women's advancement as an inappropriate Western notion. Even in 2018, an estimated 83% of Afghan women are illiterate. One-third are married off before age 18. In urban areas, women have some access to education and are better able to pursue careers and lives of their own choosing. But because of this perceived defiance of tradition, they are targeted by extremists and sometimes frowned upon by disapproving neighbors and family members. And in rural areas where the Taliban has gained ground in recent years, many women remain hidden away in homes, forcibly cloaked in burqas that cover their eyes and faces and even their hands, with little agency or ability to access health care, education, or legal support. In 2009, UNICEF said that Afghanistan was, quote, without a doubt the most dangerous place to be born, end quote. And the risks are particularly high for girls. 2 years later, Save the Children warned that Afghanistan was the world's, quote, worst country, end quote, to be a mother. All told, some 17 years after the Taliban was toppled from power in Kabul, the war-torn country is often cited as one of the worst places to be a woman. I know the situation is not good for us, Nori says, but I feel that whatever other women cannot do, I want to do, to be an example for those women, to be the voice of women who are unheard. Nori gets her start as an actress, landing a role in a TV serial at age 13. A Star is Made. With support from her family, she has worked in television ever since. It was 2 years ago when Nori learned firsthand how dangerous such a public career could be. She was a presenter at another state TV station where they occasionally made light of religious issues and current affairs. Soon after, her then boss, the male director, was kidnapped and beaten by unidentified gunmen who told them to stop their outspoken work. "Leave," he told Nori. "If this can happen to me, it can happen to you." She and her parents fled to India. One of her brothers risked death at sea to seek safe haven in Europe and made it to Germany. But in India, the family was unable to secure refugee status with the United States Nations. Her mother fell ill, a brain tumor that would later be removed in Pakistan, and facing the crushing difficulty of life as refugees and in need of medical care, they returned to Kabul at the end of 2016. Nori was more determined than ever to carve out a future in her home country. Not long after they returned, she saw posters that said, "Zan TV, coming soon." She quickly applied and landed one of the top anchor posts for Zan founder Hamid Samar, an entrepreneur. Launching the television station was about business more than equal rights. He sees an untapped market of female viewers that he hopes will propel the station's success. But Samar also believes in the mission of the work. "This is just the beginning," says Samar, of his crew of about a dozen women. He says he hopes to train the next generation of Afghan women in media and to provide a safe space for them to learn and grow. As Zan finds its footing, Samar says viewership is steadily growing, though Glamour could not independently verify the numbers. They are slowly introducing more hard-hitting and controversial topics. On one recent segment, Saleh Ghaffar, a spokesperson for the small but vocal Solidarity Party of Afghanistan, voiced her anger over stalled progress for women's rights. "Our women are still facing the same violence," she said. "Our women and girls are being raped and gang-raped by the people in power." The target of her criticism was clear: Afghanistan's deeply patriarchal, and often corrupt government officials. With such outspoken feminist rhetoric, Zan faces massive security concerns. The station has already received a direct threat from the Taliban. Most of the women working there have been targeted over social media and jeered at by strangers. "They told me, 'If you don't stop working in media, bad things will happen to you,'" says Najwa Alemi, 22, a news reporter at Zan. The staffers know to not dismiss things like this as shallow cyberbullying threats. In 2015, one of the most shocking acts of violence against women made headlines after an angry mob killed 27-year-old Farkunda Malikzada in central Kabul. The educated, vocal woman had dared to confront a fortune teller at a mosque. Authorities later found he had been selling Viagra and may have been acting as a pimp, who she felt was taking advantage of desperate women. The fortune teller responded by claiming falsely that Malikzadeh had burned a Quran. It was a death sentence. The mob ripped off her black hijab, kicked, slapped, and punched her, and even bludgeoned her with a piece of wood. Even as police tried, to save her, men grabbed her body and dragged her, limp and bloodied, to a dried riverbed. They threw rocks at her and finally lit her ablaze. It happened in one of the most public areas of the city, and the persecutors were only lightly punished. Journalists also face daily risks. In a devastating blow to the Afghan press, in January 2016, a Taliban suicide car bomber targeted a bus for the most popular TV news station in the country, Tolo News, T-O-L-O, killing 7 staffers and injuring dozens more people since it happened during evening rush hour. Nuri must endure even more concern about her safety than her colleagues. Not only is she a young female journalist shedding light on issues important to women, she's also Hazara, an ethnic minority made up of predominantly Shia Muslims that has been persecuted and targeted by the Taliban and ISIS alike. "I don't know what will happen to me," she says. "This work is a risk for my family, but I've taken the risk. It's who I am." Staying focused on the work. The taunting letters, social media posts, and phone calls can be wearying, but the staff just finds new ways to keep getting the work done. When people used photos from Alemi's Facebook page to try to tarnish her reputation, she removed all pictures of herself from social media. After other women at the station faced similar harassment, Zan staffers began patrolling Facebook, watching for targeted threats and deleting dangerous comments. The station also had to change course when it opened up call-in lines to some of its shows. Many Afghan men do not have contact with women who are not relatives, and male callers began dialing in to sexually harass female talent. The TV station quickly tasked male employees to answer the phones. Home isn't always a reprieve. Some of the TV station's staff face backlash for their work from parents, fiancés, brothers, and extended family. Nuri is lucky. Her family supports her career. But for Alemi, it's been an uphill battle. "My father is worried for my safety," she says. Yet she still wants to do more. Most of the women work in the safety of the Zan building, calling sources or interviewing them on camera in the studio, because the risk of kidnapping climbs dramatically when they report in the field. But sometimes Alemi goes out anyway, as when she reported on Kabul graffiti amid rumors of a potential suicide attack that day. She takes the risk because she hopes that by broadcasting into the homes of Afghan women, many of whom are home all day and unable to work or study, she and her colleagues can change or even save lives. "Many women are illiterate and don't know their rights," Alemi says. "We give them the hope that their daughters are able to have rights." It's this message that they want to spread to every corner of Afghanistan, says Nuri. It's what she hopes for in her own life. "All I want is to be independent," she says. In Afghanistan, it's traditionally taboo to address women by their own names, Women are often referred to as wife of Ahmad or mother of Hassan. I want to be known for who I am, not Shabana, wife of someone else, she says with a rebellious smile. And Nuri is proud to have her name broadcast on television screens across Afghanistan. I want society to get to a place, she says, where all women are recognized for themselves. Sophia Jones is an Istanbul-based writer and senior editor with The Fuller Project, a nonprofit dedicated to in-depth reporting about women's issues around the world. Kiana Hayeri is a photographer working in Tehran and Kabul. Reporting for this story was also supported by the European Journalism Center, a nonprofit media institute based in the Netherlands. All right, well, that was a bit heavy, but very interesting. All right, we're going to end on some cheap treats, $15 and under. Peep this! Studied all night? Give puffy lids some much-needed TLC with this rad mask. Petite Ami Skincare by Maverick Eye Mask. $5 at petiteamiskincare.com. Loudmouth. Rock the pink alone or layer the gold on top for ultimate statement. Maybelline, New York. Lip Studio Python Metallic Lip Kit in Wild, $8, Amazon.com. Color Block. One dreamy shade, four gorgeous gorge finishes to rock it in. Alme. Shadow Squad in Making a Statement, $7 at drugstores. No Way, W-E-I-G-H, Moussey Conditioner moisturizes strands without making your style fall flat. Herbal Essences, Cucumber and Green Tea Foam Conditioner, $6 at drugstores. And the last one, a cutie pink bear. Bear Essential, hands down the cutest way to quench thirsty paws. Skin Food, Gummy Bear Hand Gel in Grape, $8 at Ulta.com. Well, we have come to the end of our program for this evening, and we've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Aniko Gal, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleradioreadingservice.org. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached by kiwanisfoundation.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5133. That's 919-832-5138. Make it a great week. We'll see you next Thursday.